How's everybody doing? Join DEF CON? Excellent. It's great to be here again. I kind of did a little bit like impromptu talks. I kind of made this into more of a Q&A. But I got some cool stories I could share with you guys that are kind of interesting. Recently, I did a presentation for this company on the East Coast on social engineering. And I went through pretty much the hacker's playbook. I showed Dave Kennedy's set, social engineering toolkit. And then a couple months later, they decide they're gonna hire my company to do a social engineering pen test. And actually social engineering, I think it's a little bit harder than technical exploits, because if you're doing it voice and not using phishing, if you're actually speaking to someone in person or on the telephone, you have to change. You have to change the direction of the conversation on the fly. You don't have time to think about it, so you have to be really good at thinking on your feet and being convincing. And as you probably see when people are in that phone booth right over here, that to me actually is a challenge rather than simply running a Metasploit module against a target. So this company hired me to do the keynote, and then 2 months later they said, okay, come on, we want to see if you can break into our network. And I thought it was a little bit too soon, because when you do a keynote and you make everybody aware of the company, everybody was there, to go back and test them is going to be really a hard challenge. The other difficulty is when we did our information recon, we found that the company only used Mac OS X. Pretty much Mac OS X workstations and basically a Linux environment. They used the cloud. And so at first, I decided, well, let's just test a couple of the IT people to see if we can get them to bite, to see if there was a paranoia level. And I asked my client, I go, did you tell anyone in the company that we're going to be doing testing? And they said, the only person that knows is the CEO and two people in security and nobody else. I said, okay, fine. So we test a couple of the IT people, it fails. The attack, we found out what VPN service they were using for the cloud. We actually created a DMG file when we embedded a Trojan. We set up a domain name that was one letter off using a plural, so it was actually a believable domain name. We sent the attack to a person that was just hired because we're able to gain that intelligence through LinkedIn. Failed, okay? We tried another attack and it failed. Then I got to thinking, maybe the client really wasn't honest with me about the people that knew, because at least these people should have bit a little bit. So instead, did some more research on the company, and this particular company invited speakers to speak once a week. And they would actually advertise who their speakers were on the website. So basically what we did is we found out who the last speaker was. We did some research on them and found out they were represented by CAA in Los Angeles, which is Creative Artists, right? And then we set up a domain name that was CAA, I forgot the name of the domain name, but it was something that would be believable that it was actually CAA. Maybe it was caaspeakers.org or .com, I forgot exactly what it was. And we identified the person in the company that actually hired the speakers. So this guy spoke, okay, we contacted CAA, we found who that person's agent was. We set up the domain name. So the pretext was sending the host at this particular company an expense sheet, right? Because the speaker just spoke 2 weeks ago, so it would be absolutely normal for the speaker actually, or the speaker's agent, to send a spreadsheet explaining the expenses and asking for reimbursement in 30 days. And you have to think, now this is Mac OS X, we didn't have any Office client-side exploits, right? But we're thinking, since we're actually targeting somebody in human resources and accounting side of the house, not IT, that we can actually set up a macro, which is the old school. I mean, really old school, right? So basically, when the target brought up the spreadsheet, it showed the accounting expenses minus the numbers, and in the body of the email it said, if you have problems viewing the spreadsheet, please go ahead and click enable macros. I actually didn't think it was gonna work, because that's such an old school type of attack, but it worked. Right? Own this person's workstation, but not as root, but as the particular user, okay? So now I'm in the workstation, I don't even have the person's creds, but I basically have a reverse shell to one of my Linodes, because I was using a Linode to do this. On her box, on this particular lady's box, she used a tool called OnePass. Everybody hear of OnePass? It's kind of like LastPass. We analyzed it, and I was surprised that all the files, all the library, all the extension plugin stuff is actually owned by the user, not by root. What does that mean? I have the ability to change those files. We analyzed it and found that we only needed to change two JavaScript files. That's it, just two JavaScript files. And we're able to post, next time this lady authenticated, her master password to the Linode that was in the cloud. Once we got the master password, we unlocked the entire vault. We got her credentials. And of course, like human nature it is, people use the same credentials everywhere. So then we're able to find out her password. Actually, it was kind of interesting, her 1Pass. She had an account on that same MacBook, but it was her name, admin. So now that we could sudo to root, right? Well, sudo to her account, she's basically an admin, was able, basically, sudo to bash, you know, get root. And then at that point, I'm trying to remember as I'm speaking, now the company actually used VPN service, but they kept the key to the VPN service in the system keychain. But if you're root, you could simply go to the right place, you can get the credential, get the system keychain, and now you're VPN'd into the company. But that wasn't the cool part. That's kind of regular type stuff. But what's cool is this particular company used HipChat. And this company had a really open policy, so anybody in any department could actually look into any chat room. And the one that I was interested in was called Ops, right, and Development. So I'd be monitoring the chat room, and I would see every problem that occurred in the company. I'd be seeing what's going on, because they were very, you know, they used HipChat, like, for any problems. It was just, everything was going back and forth. So we're basically monitoring the communications. And then I decided, why don't I search on my own name? Because only two people in the company should really know I'm doing this test. I search on Mitnick, and it comes up a slew of information that was going back, like, 2 months. And cars would drive into the parking lot, right? And immediately someone would say, maybe that's Mitnick and his team. They came to do a physical test, right? Anything that was weird on their network, the development group was immediately thinking, oh, that could be me. And I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a second. No one's supposed to know about this. But as soon as I started the pen test, they actually announced it, right, in HipChat to everybody across the country. So as we were trying to break into more systems within their network and within their cloud provider, where, you know, we're monitoring the communications, and they didn't think we were successful. So they gave me the nickname Mittens, right? Because, you know, you wear mittens over your hands, you can't type on the keyboard. It was kind of a derogatory term. And so they nicknamed me Mittens, and we were sitting there watching them for weeks discuss me, discuss the test, saying they would actually surveil my pen testers on Twitter. They were actually doing, like, counter intel on us, and we're actually watching every step, which was kind of cool, right? And then eventually, one of the admins needed access to their syslogger and posted the credentials to that. And once we're able to get into syslog, when someone made a mistake and posted a root credential, then we're able to get further into the network, right? But it was quite interesting that companies, you know, sometimes don't even believe they can be attacked. And it was kind of interesting to watch and monitor their communications for months. So kind of cool. So I recently did another security test for the same firm. And we called, when we were able to find a vulnerability in the web server, the actual file we named mittens.php. So one of the guys, security guys, calls me and said, hey, we just want to verify if you're testing on our web server. I said, well, it could be. He goes, well, we found a PHP file called mittens.php. Would you know anything about it? I go, who else could it be? Right, so it's kind of funny. Right. Another like cool test. So even if the client is running, they're not running Windows, they're in a Mac OS X environment, if all the IT people are super smart and they're not going to fall for any type of pretext, you know, I target the people that are in human resources and accounting, people that are not technically astute, because the whole notion, the whole point of this is once you get your foot in the door of their network, then you start using technical exploits to spread, right? All you need is the foot in the door. And so it's kind of a cool story. I'm trying to think of another recent one. Oh, one was a large financial institution. We were hired to do app testing, social engineering testing, and physical testing. And to do the physical testing, they had different physical facilities. And What we found out is in one particular location, you not only to get access to their suite, you had to go through lobby security. So you either had to have a badge, you had to sign in, but they all use HID cards actually to go through the lobby. And then once you go through the lobby, you get a lobby card, then each company could set up their own type of access card, whether you know that's whatever, if it's HID, if it's GE or whatever. So we did, of course, we did some recon, and I wanted to get in more information, especially on the, where the target suite was, what type of readers they had, and so on and so forth. So what's the simple attack here? We called building management, and essentially we went in with the pretext that we wanted to rent, we wanted to lease actually, a suite, preferably on the same this particular floor, because we prefer this particular floor, right? It was the same floor that the target was on. Set up the appointment, showed up, two of us in suits, and the lady from building management is gonna take us on a tour of the entire building, right? What was extremely disappointing is she started using physical keys to access everything, to go from everywhere. But on her hip was a HID card. And what I had is I had a Proxmark 3 device that was basically sitting on top of like a yellow pad that I was carrying with me. And I asked her, I go, what is that card on the side of your belt? And she goes, oh, that's an access card to get in the building. I go, oh, really? I haven't seen those before. I go, do we get those? Like if we lease a suite, are we gonna get access cards? And she says, yes. And I go, how many are we gonna get? And she goes, you'll get 30. And I said, well, what if we need 50? So I'm like kind of negotiating with her, you know, to get her mind on something else rather than anything security-wise, you know, and negotiating the lease. So then I said, well, ooh, can I see that for a second? Oh, that's such a beautiful picture. Wow, that's an awesome, you know, trying to like, you know, hit on her a little bit, because then she's gonna think, oh, this guy's, you know, hitting on me, and get her completely off the whole idea of, you know, me having her HID card in the hand. So I basically placed it down on the notebook. I looked for like a pen in my pocket, and I basically was able to read her credentials, right? So that gave me entire access to the entire building. And this was a huge office suite. I think it was like 50 floors. But I had complete carte blanche to the entire building. And one thing that gave us was access to the elevators for janitorial services. So I basically had access to those elevators, were able to completely bypass front lobby security by going in the freight elevators, went up to the floor, and then were able to see that the particular target was also using HID cards, right? So this was a little bit more difficult because it was such a big office suite. You know, there's hundreds of people, right, that are wearing access cards. How do you pick out who the real targets are for that particular company? That's extremely difficult unless there was going to be like the logo of the company or some sort of indication of, you know, how they have the picture, of how what color the writing is, right? It's going to be a little bit harder to identify. So what we found out is the same company had other offices in the same downtown area that weren't in this large skyscraper building. So we started scouting those out and found out there was a Starbucks across the street, right? Starbucks across the street. And then you could just see the line of people at lunchtime that filter into the Starbucks, and then we're able to use a Prox 3, obviously, to steal their credentials. Once we had the credentials, we're able to use the one set to go through the freight elevator and then access the suite and eventually got into the data center. So what I didn't have at the time that would be kind of cool, everyone here knows what a Proxmark 3 is, right? And you know the distance for to read the distance is about 1 inch, right? Well, a good friend of mine built this nice toy for me, and this is like a HID reader on steroids. So I'll show you this type, this cool thing.
So this is the HID reader, right? So what's cool about this is
on a micro SD card.
And these are common, you know, here around the walking around and stored on this SD card. So what I did at RSA last year is I put this in a concealed bag and I walked through every exhibitor right by them and actually read about 150 credentials. That's going the whole exhibit hall of RSA. 150. I didn't have a camera. I didn't timestamp it. I don't know who those credentials, what companies they went to, but there was plenty.
So kind of how it works.
So you have the hit card here. And I know you're not going to be able to see this, except if you're like in the front row. But if I just get this far away, it reads the card.
That's a really good distance.
Right. And I don't know if you can see it, but the card number is 31337.
Kind of elite. And what it does is it actually stores it on the SD card, so I'll show you real quick.
Yeah,
do
you want a mic stand?
What? No, am I talking loud enough?
They both come out.
All right.
They both come out in video.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, video. Okay. I didn't we have it here. So you have a file here called cards.txt, as you can see. Hopefully the card will be there. Oh, there's a whole bunch of other crap. Hold on a second. I guess because we were testing earlier, you know, I read it multiple times. But as you can see right here is the card number, right? Oops. So you have the site ID and you have the card number. And for the low frequency cards, that's all you need. And then if you have a device like this, you can buy these out of China for like $100. And basically it comes with software and you're able to COM USB, plug it in, install the software, and you're able to write your own cards. So now you can basically counterfeit a card. So this was the exact device that we used in combination with social engineering to successfully target the company. We did have the HID reader, but we were also able to use social engineering to steal the building management's credentials. And without being able to do that through the social engineering attack, which was quite simple, for just pretending to be a company that wanted to lease an office space, we wouldn't have been able to get to the suite to identify them to move on in the attack, to chain the attack. So that's kind of cool. So, how easy is it if you're targeting a company and they want to verify your identity? Have you ever did any social engineering attacks where they want to verify that you're actually an employee? And what type of questions do they ask you? Employee number, or even if you're calling a business establishment, what do you get, the last four of your social, that type of stuff, mother's maiden name, this type of authentication information, the PII stuff. How easy is it to get it? Quite easy. So if I have a volunteer that wants to volunteer to come up here and give me permission, let me see how much information we can get about you on the internet. Anyone willing to volunteer? Okay, you have to give me consent, and you can't have a common name like Bill Smith.
Abdul-Rahman
Abdul-Haq. And you have to be living in the U.S. for, say, the last 5 years.
I have very
uncommon name. What? And have you been living in the States for 5 years?
Almost 20 years.
And where have you been living? Not in Nevada.
Maryland.
All right, we can give it a shot. So come over here. And I have your consent, right?
Yeah, I get that, right?
And if we're able to find your information in a database and display it to the audience, if that's cool with you? So I might have your date of birth, your social?
Not the full social.
All right, so... Well then, is anybody willing to allow me to show full social and full date of birth? Because if I just show partial, it's not believable. How about the guy in the green right here? So thank you anyway. Yeah. But we want to show full information, not, you know, partial. All righty. So you've been living in the States for 5 years, right? So what's your name? Wait.
Camera guy, if you could cut the video.
All right. What's your friend?
Let's not be responsible for.
Right. Right. I got that. Nordstrom. And what state do you live in? Okay. Were you born in California? Born in California. Okay. So Melvin, let's see if we could find you. So, I mean, to get access to these databases, you only need a credit card number, right? And vetting. So let's go over here. So what's cool is you can access a lot of these that allow you to look up pretty private information. So Nordstrom, right? N-O-R-S-T-R-O-M? N-O-R-T-S-T-R-O-M. Oh, Nordstrom. Okay, sorry. Well, I'm not going to type in the social. All right, I won't hit enter yet. That's a good price, but you know, of course, we don't want to encourage that activity. So let's see what we find. Really? Is that your name? Melvin Nordstrom. No records found. S-T-R-O? What?
Yes, you misspelled it by one.
Oh. I see what I did. Yeah. Nordstrom. Storm. Sorry. No. No. Middle, what's your middle initial? So we could get to the right person. E. So, okay. So, well, that's deceased, so that's not you.
You didn't know you were dead, did you?
Yeah. I have a dead one here. I mean, that doesn't, you're not 50, are you 54?
I'm not quite that old.
Okay, all right. Let's see. 42? Because there's a few of you, 42? I see he just shaking his head. So we'll just search on your social that we found here. Just faster to get to everything. So, they look familiar? So we get your social, your date of birth, your age, your phone numbers, all your previous addresses. Which is kind of cool when you're doing social engineering to have that information, you know, on your particular target. Because if you're impersonating that target to their providers of services, be it Apple, Amazon, or whatever. Usually they use payment card information, but if you can get this type of information, an attacker could go to freecreditreport.com. They have all the information they need except to answer three multiple choice questions. The multiple choice questions are usually, what county do you live in? Do you recognize any of these phone numbers before? You have a mortgage. If someone's that are difficult and you can't answer, you just answer none of the above. And usually we'll pull the full credit report. Once you have the victim's full credit report, you can impersonate them anywhere. And they can never change it, because they can't change it with their credit. Right?
So now that we got that, what do banks usually ask? What's the fallback? If you forget your password, what do they ask?
The last word is social. What,
no, but not that's the reason.
Mother's maiden name.
Mother's maiden name, right? So let's see if you can get your mother's maiden name.
Right. So that's a different site. Hope I remembered my. Let's see. Kelvin, 1, 2, 3. There we go. All right. So this is. So now searching birth records, right? So, Lord. And Melvin. We know your middle initial starts with an E. Here we go. Real, R-E-E-L, mother's maiden name, right? So basically with a few searches on the internet, we have a social, date of birth, mother's maiden name, past addresses for the last 10 years. Was the cell number valid? I could go back to it.
That was a landline.
Oh, that was a landline? What, was it valid? No, the cell. Well, I mean, that's a good amount of information to have on a target, right? So if I, now with that information again, freecreditreport.com, the attacker pulls your TransUnion, your Equifax, your Experian report. Now, how do all companies like Amazon, Apple, all the providers out there, they verify you by your payment method. What do they ask you? Usually the last four or five digits of the card number, which you already have on the credit report. So basically, now you can imagine how you could go further from there, right? So that's kind of stuff that we use when we're doing social engineering audits, but we always ask consent because to sign up for a lot of these services, you need to get consent from the company or the target, right? Another cool thing I do, whenever you're doing a social engineering attack, what's the most important thing you need? The most important thing that you need to do when you're doing a social engineering attack, gain credibility and trust, right? That's the name of the game, is manipulating the target's trust. What will people do nowadays when you say, you're claiming to be, hey, this is Bill Simon from Symantec, or Kevin Mitnick from Microsoft? Where are they going to usually go check on that? I mean, the average person, not a security professional. Where's the first place they're going to go? Google, right? Google, right? So let's see what happens when you Google Kevin Mitnick and my phone number. Let's see what company comes up. I'll show you how to do it. I'll just Google, how about the target company, Microsoft, and my cell phone number, right? We'll do that. That's easier. So Microsoft target company, and this is my real cell phone number that's on my business card. And if you do that, I come up Microsoft in Las Vegas. So if I wanted to call a target and say, hey, I'm Microsoft, and they check it in Google, it comes back as legit, right? This is so simple to do. There's a site called listyourself.net. And what that allows you to do is you could pick any company name associated with your phone number, a burner phone, your real cell phone number, whatever, and then you could push out to the internet that you're this company. So when we're doing pen tests, and it's a company with a lot of different facilities, we'll push out one of our phone numbers that obviously are under the company's name. So it's kind of a useful tool, and it works well because the whole idea is how do you convince the target that you are who you say you are, especially when you're doing a telephone attack. Back in the old days, see, I can't do this anymore when I do social engineering exercises. Back in the old days, I used to be able to compromise the phone company. And so what I would actually do is call forward one of the company's real numbers to my clone cell phone, not my cell phone, cloned, right? So I had instant credibility when I was doing those type of attacks years ago, because when I can compromise the communications provider, I mean, it's gold, right? I can be anybody I want to be. Especially what was useful back in those days was call forwarding their fax number. Okay, company fax number, I add call forwarding service to the fax, forward it to, I could forward it to FedEx, well, Kinko's at the time, which is now FedEx Office, and get them to fax internal information. In fact, that's how I got, I still live in Vegas here, but one of the things I wanted to do in my younger years was compromise the phone company called Centel so I could wiretap any call. And they had a system, because Northern Telecom developed a system called Callers, C-A-L-R-S. And how the system worked, there was 300 baud, right? You would dial in a number for each central office. You would dial in at 300 baud, and immediately it would prompt you with a seed, a four-digit seed. It was challenge response, so you had to match the seed with the correct four-digit response. Once you were authenticated, you had complete control over callers, which allowed you to seize dial tone and actually monitor calls without detection, right? How did I get the seed list? Is I basically called a division of Northern Telecom, impersonated that I was with one of their customers, call forwarded their fax number of the customer and the phone number they had on file to myself. And then I just had them fax the information. But unfortunately, we can't do that in pen testing today because your client can't put the telecommunications provider in scope. But your attacker can, right? So those are just a few stories. So I'll just open it up for Q&A if anybody has any questions.
Kevin, yeah. Can I just say one thing? I took pictures of the three people who took pictures of the screen when the social security number was out. So if I find it on Twitter, I'm going to make it my personal goal. You over here, Okay? That wasn't cool. So don't post that stuff online. Okay? Kevin was just showing something. Don't do it. Serious. Picture you. Come here. I saw it happen. I saw it happen. Okay? So don't do it. I don't want to see that crap online.
Yeah, when I'm doing social engineering attacks using the phone, because now what is the most common vector is phishing by email. What's the downside? It's a slow attack because now you have to wait for the target to read the email. Then they actually have time to think about it. You don't want that. You want the target in heuristic mode, which means they're going to take a mental shortcut to comply with your request, so it's done very quickly. On the phone, that's where you get people to do things quickly. Sometimes you do a phishing attack, then can follow up with a phone call and get that person to execute. So they're not thinking about it or taking that mental shortcut, right? So with the phone, it's a faster way to gain access to your target. But now you have to use, you know, like caller ID spoofing. You have to use techniques that make the target believe that you are real, especially if you're going in with the pretext that you're intercompany, right? Because usually on the bigger companies, you go in intercompany, right? That you're one of them to gain cooperation. But if it's a smaller company, then you're going in as a vendor, a supplier, customer, right? Then it's easier attack because it's an easier attack because now you're impersonating somebody using telephony, right? That is outside of the scope of their ability to look into it. Especially if you have tools like this where you can push out false listings to the internet. So what's your question?
When you get close enough to a card of it actually frying the card because of how strong it is?
Never. Okay. No. But I'm not usually on the bigger unit. I'm usually not that, you know, obviously I'm using that unit, you know, that device when I'm further away. Right? I'm not like walking up to someone very close, but no, I've touched it and never had an issue. Yeah. Yes. No, that could be a pretext. I mean, that's the hardest part of there's two hard parts of social engineering. One is coming up with a good pretext, and that'll, you know, I can't come here and give you the, you know, playbook of pretext. It all depends on the, you know, who the target is. You know, the whole idea is, what information do you want? What action do you want the target to do? And under what circumstances are they going to do it? And then you create those circumstances, then you're done. So it's very simple. The think of the high level. But now when you go to the issue of creating the pretext, that becomes difficult depending on who your target is. You have to think about a lot of things. And if you're doing it on the telephone, that's where the situation changes as you're speaking to the target. So now you can go in 20 different directions. It's not like a technical exploit where you know that you're going to run a piece of code and you're going to get a shell back.
Well, that's not my question.
Oh, okay, I misunderstood it. Right.
And so they probably do that so that they can improve their security, right?
Of course.
So,
or take a picture of their security posture, but at the end of the day, the goal is to improve their security.
So one thing is this thing that you were just talking about, scanning this card, the parts, the employee parts. So so you have...
What's the mitigation? Yeah, but nobody's really going to do that consistently, right?
Yeah, exactly. Especially because then, because of that thing, the card doesn't work by itself. You have to take it out of that sleeve, protective sleeve, scan the door.
I understand.
And then put it back into the sleeve.
No, I know.
And I worked at a place where we had that protective sleeve, and then everybody damaged it so that it didn't really work as protective sleeve.
So you know what I would do? I would find out the company and I would say, hey, we'd like to, you know, maybe talk to their acquisitions department, say, we would love to have you as a customer. We manufacture these protective sleeves. In fact, we're going to send you 10,000 of them for free. And hopefully next year, you'll order new ones. And you know what those sleeves will do?
Nothing.
Right. So that's one way to go in. Might work, might not. Right? Or you find out who actually they got them from, and then you send them a new batch saying there was a defective problem in the older batch, and then now you have everybody that's insecure. And they probably wouldn't even think about it. truthfully. So that's how you have to think about the problem is, you know, obviously trying to think of, you know, at the higher level, how you're going to be able to attack everybody rather than focusing on the individual. Use a different technology that's not easy to steal the creds. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Right, to use a different technology rather than low frequency hit technology. That's harder for the attacker. Right. Yes? Speak up a little bit. I heard you, do I have a blog or something? Wait one sec.
You know the Traces info site you had?
Yeah.
Do you have like lists and resources for sites for like international?
No, I did have a site in South America that worked in, like Argentina, right, and Costa Rica, right? But again, that was because I was doing a gig there, so I needed that. But it's a lot harder in Europe because Europe has different privacy laws and they make it harder for information brokers to get that information. So I wish I had an international database that would give me that information. Maybe some of you know of some that are in foreign countries.
Good afternoon. I'd like to know what steps you take to make sure that your equipment is not owned. Is that okay to ask?
Sure.
All right. Will I get an answer?
You know, the honest answer is I never know if I'm owned. Right, I'm a paranoid security guy, so I'm very careful at what I do. But I travel around the world. Right now, my laptop is sitting in some hotel room, in some hotel in Vegas. Right? How do I know that somebody's not tampering with it right now? I have no idea. Right? So you could only exercise so many controls. But what I guess I do that I really think about is every time Apple comes out with a new MacBook Pro, I buy it, and then I reload everything from scratch. So if somebody pwns me, it's for a limited amount of time. And I reload everything from scratch. And that's what I do, because I once was in Bogota, Colombia, and right before I went, I asked my former girlfriend if she would take out the drive, and we put in a terabyte drive, I believe. Not terabyte, it was a while ago, I forgot the size. So she swapped it for me. And then I went over to Bogota, and then I spoke at a conference, and when I went up to my hotel room, and I put in the key, I got a yellow light that indicated that the lock was locked from the inside. I go down to the reception, they give me a second key, go back up, still a yellow light. And I went three times back and forth, it must have been a good 15 minutes, right? And then finally it just worked. So I go in the room and everything's normal. You know, I leave Bogota a week later, right? And then I fly back into Las Vegas, and then I asked the former girlfriend, I said, hey, can you swap, I need you to swap the drive again for something else, right? So she opens up the MacBook, and as she's taking out and she's sitting in my kitchen table, and as she goes, what were you doing inside your laptop? And I was doing nothing. She goes, these screws are extremely tight. I put them in loose, right? And I go, you're joking with me, right? Because and she goes, no, somebody was inside the MacBook, and so now it all came back to me. I go, ah, so maybe that time when I was trying to get my hotel room and couldn't do it, that gave somebody who wanted to image my drive enough time to go in there and do it, right? Had the hotel look at all their cameras and all this stuff. They told me it was, you know, that there was nothing untoward they could see. I don't know if it was in Colombian intelligence. You know, the government, I don't know if you know this, but federal law enforcement, they can go into foreign countries and do this type of stuff without a warrant, because when you're in a foreign country, they don't need a warrant. So I wasn't doing anything wrong, so I wasn't really worried from that, but I was really upset because I know that this person that did the drive swap for me went to been BSing me, and screws don't just tighten on their own. If they got loose, okay, I could understand that, but they don't tighten. So probably, so you're asking about getting owned. How easy is it, right? Pretty easy.
Thank God
it was encrypted, though. So they would need the key, but we all know about the evil mate attack, right? Where they could rewrite the bootloader. Right? If you follow Jonah Rutkowski's research, blue pill, red pill, evil maid. So, and there was, you know, and I used actually at the time PGP whole disk encryption. So still, even though I was using PGP WDE, I could have still been owned and not they could have still got the be able to decrypt the data. So go ahead.
So how does what you do guide how you run your own company? And if you were to run a 10,000 person company, what would you do that most companies don't?
Well, what type of company? A security company? Or just what type of company are you speaking about?
Say a company that had lots and lots of money and secrets.
A bank. I'd put all the money in my account. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I don't think I could answer that question in like a few seconds, you know, like in a few minutes. That's a hard, long question that takes some thought and to think about. There's lots of security issues. Yeah, if there's so many security issues. That's why we have conferences like Black Hat and DEF CON, because there's so many of them to deal with, that I'd actually have to sit down with a plan and actually decide and prioritize what security controls I'd need in place, right? It's not something I could just say off the fly, hey, buy X, Y, and Z, and you're good to go. So I really can't answer that thoughtfully, you know, right here up on stage. Sorry. Yes.
It's a little different when you're a third-party auditor brought in by an organization to do a pen test. If you were working for a large organization as one of their security professionals, and you can demonstrably prove the failure of a technology such as HID, and the corporate types don't want to buy into that because of that minor nuisance of what the new technology might be from a convenience to security
right.
Perspective, do you have any advice on what to do in that environment besides alcoholism?
No, I mean, that's the case. A lot of pen testing that we do, we actually show failure. Like in this one client, they had an F5 device that had an old bug where the private key root cert was out. And we found it during the pen test. And the company was advised by their top management that they can't patch it because they won't allow a reboot, right? And that actually lasted for like 2 years. So how do you handle that? You tell the executives, here's the risk that you're taking, right? Here's the risk if you leave it like this. And if they want to accept the risk, well, that's on them.
So augment to that, yeah. How do you stay motivated or you just quit?
No, I have many different clients.
Have, no, that's yeah. The person that's inside the company.
Oh, inside?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. You may, you know, I could see how it could be demotivating, but what do you do? I mean, I guess you could only demonstrate to upper level management how high of a risk it is, how easy it is for them to lose money and image. And if they want to go that way, you know, concentrate on something else, you know. I don't have that problem.
No, you don't.
Right. So, but I could understand management not listening to you, and there's a big hole out there, and it's just out there, and there's nothing you can do. Your hands are tied. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. There.
Sir. Sir, during your penetration testing, have you ever encountered smart cards? And if so, what have you done to get past them?
No.
Do you have any suggestions about exploitable, you know, exploiting smart cards or anything like that?
I haven't looked at that. No, and we haven't had that come up. We've had clients come up for us to test crypto products. In fact, I had a recent client. They just developed a new crypto product that's on a flash drive, so it sits on your keychain. You can encrypt it. It goes in an encrypted container, right? And, you know, just a USB encryption product. Company hired us to test it. We tested it, and our team was able to break it, right? Because they seeded it with 32-bit, so they only have 32 bits of entropy, right? So it took 5 hours on a common cheap PC to work out the IV and the key. And what was the kicker is we found out this company stored the IV and the key in a bunch of random data, right? So it was a backdoor, right? So then when I pointed out to the client, who wasn't the technical guy, they just outsourced this project to a developer. The developer developed it, so the guy that was in my client wasn't part of the development team. He wasn't the coder. And when I told him he had a back door, and he goes, "You're kidding me!" And then he came and then gave him the report. He comes back to me. He goes, "I want some advice." He goes, "Do you think we should keep in this back door? Because what happens if law enforcement or the NSA needs to get to the data? We want to be able to give it to them."
Yeah, they actually asked me. Like, I'm the right person to ask that question, right? So I emailed back, as long as you give me the back door, well, cool. No, I told them absolutely not. I told them that was like completely unethical. But that made me think, if this company is doing it, how many other companies out there that are developing crypto products intentionally are weakening the algorithm, putting in back doors, and we don't know about it because we're not testing it, right? Yeah, Chris, did you have something? Okay, of course, okay. That was quick.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of facilities that have the dual factor as far as having a badge and a PIN code you have to enter. Right. What's your approach when you encounter one of those?
Tailgate is one. Since we can't clone the badge, basically trying to do information recon on how you can get physical access to the building by either walking with the group by tailgating or getting permission to enter as being a vendor. So trying to go in with the vendor approach, right? Not FedEx or UPS, that doesn't work, but as maybe to service their copy machines, for example. It would be nice in some occasions, but we haven't done this, is actually to disrupt certain type of equipment. So they actually put in a real service call to get into the facility, right? But usually going that route. But to tell you the truth, we haven't encountered many companies that are using PIN plus swipe. Most of them are just walk-in or just like HID technologies, not where they're putting in the PIN, unless they're getting in the data center.
All right, we've got time for one more question, Becky.
Yep.
You obviously have mad domains, but to what you attribute?
You're cutting out.
Yeah. I'm thinking about social engineering versus, you know, technical
here. Yeah, social engineering versus?
Technical hacking skills.
Right.
You obviously have both.
See, I'm hacking into the microphone right now. Well, kind of when you think about social engineering, it is hybrid.
Social engineering versus your technical skills.
Well, it's actually...
What
Well, actually, social engineering is hybrid attack, right? Because usually it involves doing a client-side exploit. So basically getting at the target to comply with something that exploits a piece of software that resides on the desktop, right? Except if you're using it like a Java applet attack, you're basically trying to get them to execute code without realizing they're really executing code, right? So that actually is like a technical hybrid. It's not like calling somebody up and asking for their phone number. Usually what type of technical skill, like I said earlier, it's kind of interesting because we do a lot of pen testing and a lot of clients don't include social engineering in scope. It's mostly web apps and network, right? But when we're allowed to do it, right, usually the social engineering component is only to get the foot in the door. Once we get the foot in the door, then we're looking for technical ways, using technical exploitation, to basically spread out the network and in like an Active Directory environment, getting domain admin, for example. So you're trying to put a percentage of how much technical versus social engineering. I really don't have a number for you, right? Yep.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Okay.